Blog Talk Radio.
This episode of HR Happy Hour is sponsored by Acquire, a leading provider of workforce planning and analytic solutions so powerful they should wear tights and a cape. We enable and streamline organizational charting, succession planning, workforce modeling, and strategic workforce initiatives. Visit Acquire CEO Lois Melbourne's blog at acquireinc.com/blog for her enlightening insight into current HR industry issues by way of Star Trek, The Fonz, and Ebenezer Scrooge.
All right, that was completely wrong.
That was,
hang on.
Oh,
that was completely
what happened?
The wrong song. Hang on. Take two.
Take two?
It's going to be a long time.
All right, enough of that nonsense. We could be at that all night, and I don't want to be.
Oh, my God,
that.
That's hilarious.
And I just want to explain myself, of course. This is the HR Happy Hour. We're doing the I Fought the Law show, social media and the law. I'm Steve Bowes. With me, of course, Shauna Morkey, the HR Minion. Shauna, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well.
We'll get to your news in 1 second. I want to explain that little debacle at the opening of the show. So, Shauna knows this, but for the rest of you who are not, you know, important radio hosts like Shauna and myself, the songs we've ever played on the show are listed in a section on the dashboard, and they're in alphabetical order. So for tonight's show, right, I'm going to play I Fought the Law, right, the classic tune, and right under that in alphabetical order is the Nirvana song In Bloom, and I inadvertently clicked the song just below the one I really wanted to play. So that's what that was all about. So apologies for that. So welcome to the HR Happy Hour, episode 52 tonight, July 1st, 2010, the Social Media and the Law Show. Our call-in number is 646-378-1086. We're hoping to take quite a few calls tonight. I think we're going to have kind of an open show and a good just open kind of dialogue on this topic. We've got a great panel of guests that we're going to introduce in a minute. So please call in, and if you want to get on board tonight, press 1 on your phone, and we will definitely take a few calls tonight. On Twitter, our hashtag is HRHappyHour, and we'll be keeping an eye on that as well tonight. So, Shauna, let's go to you first. I heard there's some news. I hear a rumor that there's some news you would care to share with the HR Happy Hour audience. So the floor is now yours.
So I'm moving to Birmingham. Surprise!
Birmingham,
Alabama. I'm moving to the ham.
The cultural capital of Alabama, as I understand it?
Yes, apparently.
Wow. That is big news. Well, fantastic.
Yeah. April, the best BFF ever, recommended me for a position, and that's why I'm moving down there.
Now, is this position involve our friend KD in Birmingham at all, or just
no? That would be cool. No, it's actually with April, so I'm going to be April's minion.
Whoa! Okay, wow.
That's sweet.
That is huge. Well, congratulations, I have to say.
Yay.
And, wow, that's fantastic, Birmingham. The ham will never be the same. I don't
know.
With you two down there now together, joining forces. We're good. Fantastic.
Many shenanigans.
Wow. Well, that is big news. I'm taken aback by that a little bit, but great. Well, congratulations, Shauna. And
thank you.
Good luck. I hope you will continue your relationship with the HR Happy Hour after.
Why does everyone assume that I'm not going to keep blogging or participating in stuff just because my location changes?
Everyone asks me. Alabama's a strange place, you know. Didn't they film Deliverance in Alabama? Can I verify that?
Steve!
All right. Well, enough of that. So, Shauna, fantastic news. That is great. Someone check on the Deliverance reference for me. I'd appreciate that. So let's get to the show. We've got a great panel of guests tonight to talk about social media and the law. And so we went big time. And, Shauna, first of all, in addition to your great news, and I don't know how you did it, you went out to SHRM representing the show,
yeah,
and, of course, representing, you know, your great blog. And then you also put this show together tonight. You basically did all the work, which was fantastic. And so we've got a great panel of guests tonight. Let's get to them. We talk about social media and the law. Let's first welcome our friend, a prior guest on the show, a friend to all of us, certainly. Lawyer and HR professional, the great, great Woo! Joan Ginsburg is with us. Joan, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here. Congratulations to you, Shauna. I'm not taken aback because we did discuss this. I know that this was a possibility, so I'm just so thrilled for you. I'm sure you'll be real
Thank
happy
you.
There.
Great. Joan, thanks for joining us tonight. And our next guest is a new guest on the show tonight. He's making his debut on the HR Happy Hour, bringing in the big guns for the law show tonight. Probably the best lawyer on Twitter that I know, and best lawyer all around covering, you know, employment, social media issues, and really the top guy in the space as far as I'm concerned is Eric Meyer. And Eric Meyer joins us tonight. Eric, how are you?
Hey, Eric.
I'm doing great, Steve. Thanks for having me. Shauna, congratulations on the move. I hear they do have the internet down in Birmingham. So
Yes.
You're good.
Yeah.
It's not everywhere yet, but I think they have it there.
Yeah. And Eric, thanks for joining us tonight. And our last guest, keeping it real, trying to keep us all grounded so we can't have a panel full of lawyers, right? Is we need a real HR pro, and we found one. It was hard, but we found one. The great Paul Smith, HR professional, and I like to say, Paul, I'm going to call you social commentator. Can I call you that?
You can do that, Steve. I will let you do that today.
Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here. And congratulations, Shauna.
Well, thank you, Paul.
I'm pleased to hear that. And by the way, Steve, I think that Deliverance was filmed in Upstate New York.
Upstate New York? I thought I recognized one of those guys when I stopped at the convenience store yesterday. So, yeah, you could be right about that. So, anyway, great panel. Joan, Eric, Paul, thanks so much. Shauna, big news. Wow. So where do we go from here? HR Happy Hour. We're talking social media and the law. Our call-in number, 646-378-1086. And please call in. We'll get a few calls on board definitely tonight. So let's get it started. I'll just throw it out to our panel. You know, obviously for the folks who are listening to this show or following along on Twitter, you know, the social media phenomenon is not a new thing. It's, you know, we're sort of, in a way, preaching to the choir of the converted. But,
right.
You know, let's talk a little bit about how perhaps Eric or Joan, even you, Paul, in your environment, how is social media really affecting the workplace in a more real and visible manner?
Nobody wants to answer this.
Come on, let's talk about your move to Birmingham some more.
Come on, just jump on in.
Okay, well, I'll jump in, if you don't mind, for everybody.
Go ahead, Joan.
In my experience, and most of you know that I come from small business, it's not affecting the workplace at all, because it is being essentially blocked out by the workplace. I mean, I guess the affectation is a negative affectation. People around here that I speak to are essentially, they don't get it, and I know you've all heard this before, they don't get it, they don't want to get it, they don't want to have anything to do with it, don't talk to me about it. It's that, you know, that ostrich thing that you know, many people have been talking about lately. That's the general sense of what I'm getting in my area. In my workplace area.
It's starting to gain momentum little by little. I'm starting to have more and more clients ask about social media policies and do we need to do anything about it. So it's slowly getting onto the radar screen. How many employees are actually engaging in social media at work? It varies a lot. And as Joan said, a lot of businesses are just shutting it off altogether. They put the firewall up. But other businesses I've talked to really want to encourage their employees to use it, as long as it doesn't make them unproductive in the office.
And do you get the sense, Eric, when organizations approach you and your firm about helping them navigate some of these issues, that there are concerns about, you know, productivity and time wasting, those typical things we hear? Do you get that, though, on a day-to-day kind of client-to-client basis?
Those are pretty common concerns, other than, you know, oh, my God, what if they what if our employees post something defamatory about the company online? I think also up there is productivity.
Right. And, you know, and I just want to let people know who are listening tonight. Eric has agreed to monitor the tweets tonight. So if anybody posts anything defamatory about the show tonight, you know, you'll be expecting to hear from him on my behalf. So thank you for that. Yeah, we're
bring out the big guns, aren't you, Steve?
We're not going to take it tonight. I'm not going to take any disparagement.
Not going to take it.
No, I don't have to anymore. We've got lawyers on the show.
Wow.
Steve, need I remind you, retainer.
Yeah, that's right.
The end of that.
You know, Steve, if I may, I was thinking that, you know, probably the biggest impact that this is having on the work environment is sort of the negative thoughts about it. And some of the problem is with social media, there are so many different social media sites, and there's an infinite amount of social media that you can tap into, and you can tap into it all day long. It's not like the telephone where, you know, someone's probably, you're only going to talk to one person at a time, and you're going to have to get off the phone at some point. And I think that's the biggest concern for a lot of businesses, that people are going to waste an enormous amount of time, more so than they would have with just email or their phones. And I think that's where a lot of the fear comes from.
Yeah, that's interesting, Eric, that you bring that up, sort of the you know, because that's a typical argument, right? People will bring up the older technologies that have been in the workplace forever, like, you know, obviously phones and email and things like that, and they'll sort of argue, well, you know, no one argues anymore that employees should not have their access to email or phones or things like
mm-hmm.
that, and they try to make that sort of, they try to equate it, right, when they're making the argument that it's the same thing or the same concept as phone or email, but it's really not. You know, it's certainly more, it can be more impactful and certainly more, present more of an exposure to the organization, I'd imagine.
Well, that's exactly right, because of the viral nature of social media. I mean, you know, God forbid someone at Coke were to put out the secret, the Coke formula. All we have to do is hit retweet, and everyone's going to hear about it, and it's going to trend on Twitter, and it's out there, and you can never bring it back. So I think the viral nature of social media changes the dynamic from email, which is just a one-on-one or maybe three or four conversation.
And internal, right, and kept behind the firewall and nice and safe
right.
and protected. And, Paul, how about you? You're out there working in the real world of HR, right? Not just playing at it like the rest of us.
Yeah, not just the fake world of HR. No.
No, you're out there. Come on, you're dealing with it. You're getting dirty. What's happening out, and what do you see where you are or just with your friends and peers?
Well, as I just mentioned there, you know, I think that one of the things I see is that there is that fear of it just being overused and taking people over from their own time. I mean, the people not managing their time properly.
Right.
And then on top of that, you have a lot of problems with training, with managers, and them not being able to, watch or monitor this. And I think the old ways are much like that. You know, that the concern is that when managers walk by your desk, they want to be able to see you working, and they want to see evidence of work. They want to see papers strewn all over your desk. And they want to see stern-looking faces, and they want to see, because if it doesn't look like work, then it's not work. So
But observation is the worst way of determining performance.
What's that?
Just using observation is actually one of the worst ways of determining someone's performance.
Yeah.
Right.
And
I think
that there needs to be more of an emphasis on is there work getting done? What is getting accomplished and what is getting done? And not so much focusing on how many minutes somebody was on Twitter today. Does it really matter?
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I sit on the fence sometimes on this because I think it's important to get work done. Do you want to completely stamp out social media and all the benefits that do come along with it? No, but so that's, you know.
But it's a time suck, right? I hear that. That's probably, I think you asked that question too, Steve. I think that's probably one of the most common arguments that I hear from just people that are in the workforce. I heard this from a friend of mine who happens to be assistant dean at a law school just a couple of days ago. She's adamantly against social media because it is a time suck, according to her, you know, and I can talk to her about, well, maybe your employees aren't engaged or maybe you're trying to control them and all these, you know, HR things too much. She doesn't care. She cares that they're sitting on their computers and they're not working and they're you know, doing Facebook or Twitter, which takes a lot, is more involving. You know it. We all know it. It's a little more involving than answering your email. It does take more time. It is a time suck.
It requires a lot more self-discipline. I could spend a whole day on Twitter, but if I'm at work, I take like a Twitter break. I jump on, I jump off, and then you can spend a whole day on there, but I'm not going to get anything done.
Yeah. Let's take a quick reset. Paul, just so you know, I do have a stern-looking face on right now, so I'm taking this very seriously. Just so you know, I'm feeling, you know, really focused.
HR
happy hour. Yeah, no, for sure. We're talking about social media and the law. We're going to get into some more of the legal issues with our legal team here, and Joan Ginsburg, of course, Eric Myers with us, Paul Smith. Our call-in number is 646-378-1086. Our hashtag on Twitter is HRHappyHour. If you were just tuning in, Sean, I've always wanted to say this. This is episode 52, and I've yet to do this. But if you are just tuning in tonight, you missed this news at the top of the show. Shauna is moving to Birmingham, Alabama, a shocking announcement at the very top of the show.
Yeah.
So that was big news at the beginning of the show. So we're talking with our friends Eric and Joan and Paul, of course. I'd like to spin this a little bit slightly differently, guys, and talk a little bit about, organizations, many organizations certainly are still concerned about time wasting and productivity wasting, and people just goofing off all day on Farmville and Facebook. And, you know, I can sort of get that to some extent, but you know, that's sort of, in a way, kind of a silly argument. And certainly the response to that has traditionally been, well, you know, that's not a social media problem, that's a management problem, or that's an engagement problem. But Eric, you know, as a practicing lawyer in this space, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about some of the very real concerns, legal issues, and sort of exposure that organizations might have when they sort of, if not promote, certainly allow employees, you know, to access and utilize social media, you know, during the work day and on work equipment.
A good question. One thing, if you allow employees just to run rampant using social media without educating them on the risks of misuse of social media, you have a few problems. I mean, one could be defamation about the company, risk of exposure of trade secrets and proprietary information. Not that I used the Coke employee example before. If someone may post the secret recipe to Coke, well, that's not likely to happen. But maybe on a smaller scale situation, someone may post unknowingly or without even really thinking about it, proprietary or secret information about a company. Other risks. Much in the same way that face-to-face or email can be used to harass coworkers, certainly social media can be used to harass coworkers. So there's exposure there. But again, that doesn't necessarily flow from an employer saying, go ahead, employees, have at it on social media. Even if an employer has a very restrictive policy at work, the employees can still do this on their own time. So many of the same risks that come from electronic communication, such as email or even face-to-face or telephone conversations, they're out there from the use of social media.
Paul or Joan, any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that Eric just, you know, touched on something that really is important. Many of these risks are the same exact risks, as he said, that you get when you talk face-to-face or whatever. It's just that people seem to think that there's somehow more of them or bigger, I guess because the computers are such a, you know, pervasive, or the use of computers is such a pervasive thing in the workplace. But the risks are really very, very similar to most of the risks that we always have. Is somebody going to divulge something, or is somebody going to discriminate against you because of this or that? I mean, those are all real work issues, in regardless of whether you use social media or not. I'm not sure why social media is such a bigger risk, or why people think it's such a bigger risk, because you have a lot of these same risks,
Well, then why? And then I'll just throw it, you know, and then I'll take this to the next step. Then why? And I wasn't there, so I'm sort of speaking sort of secondhand and based on some reports I read and observing some commentary. Why are some of the larger organizations and big conferences seem to be, including that one requisite session, right? Like at the Sherm event, and I know Mark Stelzner tweeted and wrote about this somewhat. You know, why is there that one requisite session every time where, you know, they trot out a lawyer, not Eric, of course, but an inferior lawyer with like a bat, you know, worse hair, I'm sure, to get out there and scare the crap out of all the HR people in attendance about all these issues.
I applied for that role and they rejected me.
Right.
You weren't scary enough. You weren't all, you know, everyone's going to not work and the company is going to go down the tubes the second social media enters the realm. So, I mean, you have to go all apocalyptic on them.
Right. Why is that happening out there?
Why is it happening out there?
Yeah, like why do HR pros go to big established HR events and conferences? And if you don't know, that's cool.
No.
Like why is it happening? Like, why are we scaring people about this so much?
I think my theory about that is that there's still a lot of people out there who are still not connecting or they don't understand social media, and they hear a lot of horror stories. And I think that these sessions are designed to educate to the point where you at least need to know that there is some risk to this. Because I think there's a school of thought out there, and a lot of people, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think some people think there is no risk. And if you don't know enough about social media, and if you're not connected, and you have people telling you that, oh, there is no risk, don't worry about it. And then on the other hand, you hear all these horror stories. I think that's why. I think maybe HR people are getting mixed messages about that social media isn't a problem, but they hear these horror stories. And I think that these sessions attract people who are not understanding fully.
I wonder if some of it is sort of to reinforce their perceptions that they have, right? They walk into it thinking, boy, I don't want anybody messing around on Facebook on my watch, and they sort of go to a session like that to sort of get validated about why that's the right decision, right? Because there's the potential for some, you know, trade secret being revealed or some horrible, you know, time-wasting activity happening, which is sort of another kind of weird argument, right?
Not everyone is on Facebook, not everyone's on Twitter, not everyone's doing this. So I think there's still a lot of people out there that need to gain knowledge about it, and they hear the horror stories. Joan, you and I were in one session in D.C., and the woman just rattled off one incident after another,
right,
about all the horror stories. And it wasn't until you and I and Mike spoke up and told her that, hey, wait a minute, are you just here just to scare everybody, or
right.
are you here to talk about this? So, but most people seem to be comfortable with being scared. So,
right. You know, I think that's right, and it's not just lawyers, and I just want to maybe be a little defensive. You know, it's not just lawyers that are doing that. Now, Paul and I had that situation at a conference where lawyers were doing that, but my local had a program on social media last year, and there were four panelists, one of which was an employment lawyer, and he was actually pretty supportive. I mean, he said what I said before. You know, there's risks. You just have to know them, and you have to manage them. It was really the HR people in the audience that were truly, you know, they had their fears, and they don't want to be the ones that, you know, get blamed, I think, maybe for some of this stuff. And they had their fears, and they just were not going to let this attorney tell them that they didn't have to be so frightened. They were very frightened of social media, and, you know, it's all out there, and I can't stop people from discriminating if they see it. I mean, there was just really, people are nervous, and I think that they feed into that, and they want to validate that to some degree.
Yeah, that's. I think, Joan, I think you're probably right. Yeah, that's an excellent point, Eric, as well. So
mm-hmm.
let's do a quick reset, and then we'll take calls. If you're hanging out waiting to get on board, please hang out another minute or so. And if you're on the line, on hold, and listening in, and you want to jump on board, just press 1 on your phone, and we'll get you on board in just a minute. This is the HR Happy Hour. We're kicking around social media and the workplace and some of the reasons why folks are still scared about it and some of the issues concerning it. We're going to get to in a few minutes a little bit more about the policies in and around social media, something I know Eric works on a lot, advising his clients and companies. But our call-in number is 646-378-1086, and our hashtag on Twitter is HRHappyHour. So, Shauna, let's take a couple of calls, I think.
Yay!
Line 8 has been waiting for quite a while. Area code 760, you're on the HR Happy Hour.
Hey, aloha. This is Sylvia Dalby calling from sunny Hilo, Hawaii.
Hi, Sylvia.
Hi.
I'll
Hi,
say
Sylvie.
Aloha. How are you?
Aloha. I am excellent. This, you know, no offense to the lawyers. First of all, everybody hates lawyers until they need them.
Oh, don't say it like that.
Until they need one, right. Absolutely.
We all understand that, right? But so nothing personal. But I went to a social media program on recruiting and HR and social media, and it was presented by a lawyer. And I was a little bit shocked because they really frighten people right out of their socks. And I think part of it is there's so much that's unknown, right? That this, there's no precedence. We're dealing with new media, and so people are, there's a lot of fear factor out there, particularly on the part of the lawyers who have no idea, like, what's going to come up, right? So they're a little bit reluctant to encourage people to take advantage of the tool. I would like to suggest that a better way to look at social media is that it's essentially a public place. So all of the kind of rules that apply in a public place, I think a lot of those we're going to see carry over into the social media world. A woman asked a question about Facebook, because one thing the lawyer mentioned, and Eric, you can stop me if I'm wrong about this, was that they couldn't do any backdoor reference checks like on Facebook, for example. And the woman asked if one of her Facebook friends was an employee, and that employee referred somebody who interviewed for a job, and then by way of that Facebook kind of backdoorish connection, something ended up, you know, on her site that was, you know, maybe not rated G or very inappropriate or would be very risky if you hired that individual, right? That was that going to be okay, you know, if she put the little X next to his name of candidates for further consideration? And the attorney really didn't quite know how to deal with that question. And then I kind of jumped in there and said, well, what if you were at an open-air concert, right, and you saw that same guy who, you know, stripped off his clothes and jumped into the ocean and got hauled off by the police. Would you hire him then, right? No, of course you wouldn't. So I think that we're going to see some precedents that are set comparing it more to a public place because we know, for example, email's not private, right? This stuff that people put out there on Facebook and so forth, it's really not private stuff. It's there for the world. So anything that you can do out in public that would create a problem for your employer or your prospective employer, I think is going to become fair game once some of these stuff does come to court, because it will, right? And then the second point I'd like to make is that social media policy needs to be the same as Internet use policy or email use policy or anytime you have a employees doing personal stuff during business time. And if you're a recruiter and you're using social media as part of your work, I mean, hey, same thing, you're using the internet, aren't you? I mean, it's part of your job. So you just, that's just simple time management. So there needs to be a policy in place to govern personal use. And then if they're using it for business, then they just better be doing a good job of it, because otherwise it is the same. The time suck, as you say. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I think there's a lot of fear and a lot of misunderstanding, but essentially it's just a new media. And until precedents are set, we're all just guessing. And the best way to regard this as either a personal use policy for internal purposes, and if you're using it in a hiring environment, just regard it as it's a public place. It's open, it's available, it's public domain, and anything anybody puts out there is fair game.
Sylvie, thanks so much. I appreciate the call. And Shauna, you'll remember, of course, that one of the best moments in HR Happy Hour history, which I'm not gonna relive in
entirety,
please
don't rehash it.
Certainly was a contribution from Sylvie in the past. So quite
well,
memorable.
Well, thank you. I am basking in my 15 minutes of fame. Now, remember, I didn't have any intent to drink. It was just named after me.
Sylvie, we'll do another show where you can call in and tell that story again, because we're much more popular now than we were back then. So there's lots of people who haven't heard.
Very true.
Thank you, guys. I'm finding this a very interesting show, because I think it's an evolving thing, and I want to thank the people that are participating today.
Great. Thanks, Sylvie, so much. Let's quick reset. HR Happy Hour, social media and the law. We've got Eric Meyer, Paul Smith, Joan Ginsberger with us, 646-378-1086. Eric, I want to throw this one to you. Sylvie mentioned policy, and I know this is a big part of what you do in advising your clients and organizations in and around social media. I'll just do a simple question. Do organizations need a separate social media policy beyond the typical policies they have already regarding sort of computer usage, email usage, and whatnot?
100% without exception, absolutely yes. How about that?
And why do they need one, Eric?
For no better reason than to educate your employees on what social media is. We all listening to this show and know what social media is. We're listening on Blog Talk Radio. We've got a Twitter stream going on. A lot of employees may not know what social media is. And I think if nothing less, it educates them on the different types of social media. You're also going to let your employees know that you reserve the right to monitor them. It doesn't mean you're going to do it.
Right.
But if an employee thinks that he or she is outside of the reach of their employer because they are updating their Facebook status at home or posting defamatory or harassing comments on a coworker's wall at home, then they're sorely mistaken. So the employee needs to know what's tolerated, what's not tolerated. I mean, it doesn't have to be a set of rules. It can be guidelines. It can be guidelines and rules, a good mix. That's something I advocate. But I think if nothing less, you're educating the employee on what is social media, and you're letting them know that the employer, to a certain extent, cares about what you're posting out there if you're creating potential exposure for the employer.
Eric,
if I may add, I agree completely that you need to have a separate policy. And the company itself is operating in a social media world, you definitely need to have a policy, guidelines on how your employees operate within the structure of the company's social media, whether or not it's a Facebook page, a Twitter page. And again, I'm with Eric. It's about setting up guidelines, because a lot of that kind of thing falls under public relations. So what you're doing, at least on the HR end, is giving the public relations department guidelines on how to proceed so that they can then set up procedures on how to do it and keeping everybody happy and safe. So,
Eric, you made a distinction between guidelines and rules. Can you give us an example, you know, like a real example of what's a guideline versus what would be a rule?
Examples of guidelines. Don't tweet when you're angry. Post content online about what you know. Be transparent. Don't hide behind pseudonyms. We suggest that when you use social media, you abide by the terms and conditions or the terms of service of each social media site that you use. Be courteous when you post online. Those are examples of guidelines. Examples of rules are: do not post proprietary information of the company. Do not use the logos and marks of the company without prior written permission of the company. Let's see what else. The social media policy incorporates by reference all of the other policies or relevant policies of the employer, such as anti-harassment and so on.
Fair enough. You know, Eric, it's funny that you mentioned, thank you for that. Thank you for, for breaking it down that way. You know, it seemed to me, Shauna, some of the guys, I have a son who's in third grade or just finished third grade. And so, right, what do they do here, and at least in the U.S., right, with these little kids? Every class has got their, you know, the five principles of respecting each other, or the, you know, the three, you know, the three rules we abide by to make sure, you know, everybody's second grade experience is happy. And a lot of what Eric said reminded me of some of the things I've seen, some of the propaganda that's come my way, like of how kindergartners should treat each other, right? You know, don't respect each other, don't shove each other on the playground, you know, don't, you know, things like that. It's not, you know, just don't be an idiot, right? I mean, we could probably boil down quite a few of them into that.
Well, kind of a lot of things in life can be boiled down to don't be an idiot.
Possibly, yeah, possibly. Let's take another call. Let's go to country code 44. You are on the HR Happy Hour.
Hi, Steve.
Hey,
hi, Paul. Hi, everybody. How are you doing? I just want to make a couple of quick points and get some views. The first one is I'm finding myself unusually disagreeing with the panel on the social media policies. And I've changed my view on this quite a lot since HR Evolution, in that I think by having a very separate set of social media rules, you're indicating that in some way social media is different to other forms of communication. What I actually think you should be doing is just including social media in all your policies as a normal method of communication, because I think it's the policy that creates the fear. Failing that, if you've got to have a policy, the best ones that I've seen are outlines of what you can do rather than what you can't do.
So give you an
example. Just what the panel
Bill, let's just say I'm a regular old employee. I'm in the accounting department. My job doesn't really involve being on social media. So what would you suggest? Like, what can I do?
Well, I think that applies to what you can do in the company on any circumstances. What you can, at the end of the day, you're covered by confidentiality of information that you might have, company secrets, things you don't put into the public domain. If you're going to be maybe you're going to be using it from a recruiting function, you might use the accounts department to build connections for accountants. You're going to apply the same rules over defamation, over what you do and what you don't say over the company. But I actually think that covers a whole communication policy of what you can do on, and job policy of what you can do on company time.
Right. Okay.
The real grey area that comes up in this is, I think if you look at the way social media works, it's really difficult to define personal use and business use, because most business use, if you're building something like a talent pool or a target client pool, actually looks like it's personal use, because it's chat about coffee or Starbucks or where you're on holiday, because you're building connections. And I think that's the real grey area that sometimes needs defining. But having a separate social media policy, I think, builds fear rather than just including social media in all your policies where it fits in.
I think, hey, Bill, you made an interesting point, or you sort of alluded to one, and I want to ask about it now, and sort of the panel can weigh in as well, and sort of this blend between sort of business and personal, right? So let's just say, for example, and I bet if we thought hard enough, we could come up with some people we actually know who would fit this category. There are people who are popular, you know, the online space, bloggers, or popular on Twitter, and they happen to work in an organization, or they happen to be a recruiter, right, Bill? And they have a very sort of, say, a corporate, on the corporate side, okay? That's the scenario.
Yeah.
And but they've got thousands of followers. They're pretty popular. They're influential. They go to events and whatnot. And so but they're also a person, right? They're a unique individual. And so sometimes they'll be sort of promoting their company and posting job openings, right, that they might have, or come to an event my organization is sponsoring. But other times they're sort of being their self. It's hard to see sometimes in the social space, if you get what I'm saying, right, where the work person is ending and the person is beginning, and how that could be. Can that even be managed, Bill? Can you manage that and try to?
Well, I don't think it can be managed. I think that's where the guidelines come in terms of, you know, if you are going to have business contacts in your networks, it's a business network. The actual complication comes for these individuals when they're building networks and they want to change jobs.
Yeah.
That's where the real legal issue comes in. That's where the big – I know from a recruiter's point of view, that's probably one of the single biggest fears, is that you're going to build up this big network on Twitter, on LinkedIn and Facebook, and you're going to take it with you when you move your job.
Well, I got to tell you, Bill, thanks for that. And hang on with this. Eric, I know you're hanging out on Twitter too. This whole, do you need a separate policy for social media use, is really kind of splitting our, at least our Twitter stream,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Shauna, have you seen this as well? There's definitely,
oh, yeah,
like,
totally.
a lot of people coming down on either side of it, like, it's not needed versus, you know, you must have a separate policy. It's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think you need a separate policy. I think you need a separate policy, because just sticking the word social media into an acceptable use policy for internet and email doesn't explain to the employees what social media is. And I think there are different risks associated with social media use than there are with just regular email use. So I think, yeah, I think it requires its own policy.
And actually, if I may, I think that Bill brought up a really good point, and that's actually probably an even better reason to have some type of policy, and it is that gray area of personal and professional use. You know, you don't want to, you want to have something in your policy that says that we allow and we encourage people to use social media outlets to enhance and improve their own individual professional acumen. And because we know that you want to discuss current issues in your profession, or you want to share tips and techniques. So I think that, you know, that gray area should be addressed, and I think if it's written well, can give people some guidelines there in terms of, hey, it's okay to be on social media. it goes back to this whole concept of if it doesn't look like work, it's not work. Well, if I'm on Twitter or if I'm on Facebook and I'm trying to solve a problem using my network of folks, isn't that work? And why does it, just because I'm on Twitter, does it make it look like I'm talking about what I'm drinking, what kind of coffee I'm drinking?
But isn't that a training issue rather than a policy issue, though?
Well, but the best social media policy I've ever seen actually talked about not only what it was and kind of what the company's expectations around its employees' use of it. It also offered, you know, suggestions on this is what makes a good blog, engage with your readers. You know, it was encouraging at the same time as, telling people to kind of, you know, just be a little careful. So I think that's a really effective way of doing it, and I approved of that one.
I agree. I think.
I think it's also important to distinguish, at least for practical purposes, the difference between different types of social media. I mean, you have Twitter, which is kind of quasi-professional, quasi-personal. Facebook, people think of more as a personal thing. But then you have LinkedIn. I mean, that's the way you build your business contacts. I would think most businesses would encourage their employees to use LinkedIn and build up their contacts, because that's going to generate business and be profitable for the company. And that's the response I get when I go out and speak and talk to companies about this generally, that they want their employees using LinkedIn so they can build up their business network.
Yeah.
But I think Paul,
hang on for one second. I want to do a quick reset, and then I have a question I want to ask. And I was about to ask it, and someone tweeted out the same question, so I thank you for that. I'm just getting her name, Kathy. Kathy Manis, thank you for that. I want to ask that question that she just tweeted. We got about 15 minutes to go on the show. We're talking about social media in the workplace. We have Eric Meyer with us. Joan Ginsburg is with us. the great Paul Smith, social commentator, which is now how I refer to you, Paul, is with us. Bill Borman's hanging
said
out.
That.
Yeah, Bill
Thanks.
Borman's hanging out with us as well. So our call-in number is 646-378-1086. We probably can squeeze in a couple of more calls tonight, absolutely. So if you want to get involved tonight in the show, please do call in. And we are monitoring the Twitter stream as well on the HR Happy Hour tag. The question from Kathy that I'll throw maybe to you, Eric, to see if you know about this or have an opinion about it really is what happens when someone who is in a professional capacity, building up Twitter followers, LinkedIn contacts, really run a page on Facebook with hundreds and thousands of friends, and then they leave the organization. So what happens? Are there precedents involved? Are there policies that you advise organizations to create in and around that eventuality, right? Because let's just say I've become really, really popular at this job. Part of my job was being active on social, and then I leave to go independent or go somewhere else. Do I take my, 50,000 followers with me or not?
A good question. I think that's another important thing that goes in the policy book for the employer. They have to let the employee know what the expectation is if an employee leaves, whether a network built up on LinkedIn would be considered company trade secret information, like a customer list or prospective customer list, or whether they're going to be okay with letting employees go. There have been some cases on that, and to be honest, standing here right now talking on the phone with you guys, I forget where they've come out, but that's certainly an issue that's just getting started. This whole idea of
It's brand new, right? And the example that I thought of, and I don't think this ever evolved into an actual case, but Chris Dunn wrote about this on The Capitalist. I know there was a woman a couple of years ago, right? Once the celebrities got onto Twitter, right? That was a really big deal, right? Absolutely, and that helped to spur the popularity of the whole network. And so Shaquille O'Neal came on Twitter, the real Shaq, and he became very, very popular. And at the time, he was playing for the Phoenix Suns. Right when his sort of infatuation or experimentation with Twitter started to happen, and there was a woman who worked for the team who was responsible for PR communications or something, and she was kind of always with Shaq and kind of shepherding him around the place to place, and she had a Twitter account, and her Twitter account was Phoenix Suns person or something like that, and she had hundreds of thousands of followers, right? She had developed essentially because of this relationship that she had with the team and with Shaquille O'Neal, right? And then she left the employee of the team, became a consultant or, set up her own company or whatnot, and basically just switched her name to, sports and social media advisor and took the 500,000 followers with her. And it was done, in an instant, right? And so that theoretically her employer, who she had built up these hundreds of thousands of followers sort of on their time and on their dime, was left out in the lurch.
And I think that's why Eric says that you need to establish that, right up front. Now, it might be too late for, the Phoenix Suns lady after the fact, but, this is something that you have to decide. And I think I'm with Eric. I know there's been a couple cases on that, and I don't know what the outcomes are, but, there's cases like this all the time. Lawyers leave the firm. Do they take their files? Don't they? I mean, there's all kinds of things like that. There's precedent, just maybe not necessarily in the specific social media realm, but I think that you're going to find that a lot of it's going to come down to the factual, the specific facts of the relationship with that employer and what they were doing and that employee and what they were doing and how they were doing it. And that's why it's hard to say, oh, yes, you can or no, you can't. Lawyers say it depends. A lot of it depends on the facts of the situation, and I think it's going to depend on the facts of the situation, but that's why you want to start out by saying, if you can, here's what we expect and here's what we don't expect, and if you terminate relationship, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, first of all, don't confuse me, Joan, with the facts, because you're confusing me. and second of all, maybe this is just my fault, for trying to running the show a certain way or asking a certain question. Boy, Shauna, maybe you think this. I feel so negative. Like all we're talking about is negative, right? Like we're talking about policy and restriction and exposure and saying bad things on the internet, and I wonder. But is that a metaphor for how many organizations are still approaching this as something bad to be managed and avoided and controlled, rather than approaching the workforce or just the rank and file employee and seeing this as more of an opportunity or a something that could be exploited.
Oh, that's a really good point.
We'll leave it out there for the Twitterverse to discuss, I suppose.
I thought you were having a shot at it.
You actually brought up a good point, Steve. It's this thing, it just turns into this negative conversation, and you were asking earlier, why are there all these sessions at these conferences about this? The conversations just turn negative. And I'm not really quite sure why, but
right. They
do.
Yeah. Let's take one more call. We have one more person who wants to get on board tonight. Let's go to area code 513. You're on the HR Happy Hour.
Hi, Steve. It's Steve Brown.
Steve Brown,
hey,
how are you, buddy?
Good, man. How are you?
Great.
Thank you for
the song suggestion tonight, by the way.
Hey, not a problem. being the non-negative person, the thing I think is really interesting watching all the Twitter leads is that most HR people who aren't involved in social media are very negative because that's the kind of culture that keeps permeating that they work in. So everything that falls into that culture is negative, whether it be social media or something new or a marketing effort. And it's really a shame. So I think it's, you know, we have to get away from the forums and talk about the culture and how it affects and how HR can champion things and initiate things along with policies, along with procedures, and show them parameters of what to do. I've seen a lot of comments about treating people like adults. Wouldn't that be nice? You know, there's just a lot of cool stuff that HR people could do with this and be champions of it, along with the legal advice that Joan and Eric have been giving instead of worrying about what not to do.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Steve. Steve, you're a leader in HR, but you're out there in the trenches. You're not just a pundit. I mean, in your experience, right, like us, Shauna. Well, Shauna, you're going to the Birmingham, and you're going to take over that market. But you know,
going to the Ham.
The Ham? Do I call it the Ham? Do they
the
call
ham.
It that down there?
I think
right,
so.
The Ham. Shauna, you better learn the lingo before you get down there.
I better.
Steve, in your experience, either at your organization or just with your peer group, because you run a big HR group in Cincinnati, what's your sense of sort of on the ground with real working HR professionals, their sort of attitude towards social networking, social media in the workplaces?
I think the fear thing is a real thing. At our local chapter meeting, we had a thing of how to use social media at work for work, and the first question was how to ban everything. And no one even tried it there, and there were three of us, Jen McClure, Ben McCall, and myself, who were tweeting the whole time going, what's going on? Oh, my gosh, it's like the Titanic is sinking.
Was the band playing?
Yes, it was. But the thing that was really, really sad was when the three of us who are active tried to bring up positive things, so many people are isolated in HR, period. And I think a bigger step we could do is helping them to get less isolated and more engaged as professionals. And then we can teach them cool things like this. But a lot of people are just isolated and scared, and they're dealing with all the stuff that has nothing
to
do with it.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think part of the reason might be that the argument sort of in favor of sort of more open and more loosening of the restrictions, if they indeed exist, the argument in favor of doing that is more just – well, you should do it, or just because. Like, there's not a compelling enough or a real enough reason for people to change their minds?
Yes.
I think
it's really very true. I think I saw a tweet, and I agree with it. You have to make the business case for it, just like anything. Our company is very involved in social media, and we're trying to reach our customers because of the business opportunities it has. And if you focus on that, and that's what you model as your culture, you're less likely to have the nastiness happen. Not that it wouldn't. But, you know, it's less likely to happen.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting to me that it's just sort of like a lot of – it's easy to make the negative side, right? It's easy to take that position and argue the negative risk or, you know, exposure or time wasting. I mean, because it's so hard to fight back against those, but yet that's sort of the positive side of the argument. It's much more difficult to sort of quantify and to prove, and perhaps it's even impossible in many circumstances. So I think that's one of the challenges for sure.
So, Steve, can I ask you a question? This is Joan. Can I ask you a question? When you were at that meeting, what did you do when faced with that very first, this is a pathetically bad thing issue. I mean, you and Ben and Jennifer, I mean, you guys, what did you do to try to overcome that? Because that's, this just comes back to the same, discussions we've had over and over. How do we get these people, in our local SHRMs or wherever to start paying more attention to this, the positives of this?
Well, after seething first, and wanting to kill everybody in the room.
After you controlled your anger and you didn't tweet while you were angry.
Repressed your rage.
I tried
to
kill.
There's probably a policy against, hitting people
killing.
On the job. So.
I had to share the things that they do know, because, like, the things we run out of Cincinnati, like the HRNet, which is a resource, and showing people the resources of social media. Not making the argument for or against, saying, I'm learning more. I'm learning from people like Joan and Eric and all you guys, and learning blogs and finding stuff I never would have found if it hadn't been for social media. And showing how that it opens up the world, like this world we never knew was existing, or that other HR people did the same things we did. And we tried to approach it from the positives of what you could find on the resource side, and some people came around, but others jumped right back into the negative things.
Great point, Steve. Hey, we just have a couple minutes left in the show. Just real quick, I just want to throw it out. Eric, throw it to you real quick. If I'm an organization and I'm looking to get, and perhaps I've been, maybe one that's been afraid, restricting, blocking, whatnot, and I want to get more involved in, in letting my employees get out there on social media and get more interactive and supporting that, what's the first one or two things I should do, in your opinion?
Get a policy and educate your employees about company culture, and not necessarily tell them what they need to post online, but guide them, give them a little bit of guidance, and then if you're just stepping into the water, give them a few rules and see how it goes.
Great. Paul Smith, you're working at a company, you love your job, you love your company, and you're trying to make an argument to loosen up the restrictions that you have in place. What might you say to your CEO about this whole topic to try to enlighten him or her?
Well, it comes back to your line of business. It comes to your culture. Is it necessary? I think that's the first question you have to ask, because sometimes you actually may have the other side of the coin, where you have a CEO who wants to do everything, who wants to just get on Twitter and Facebook because everyone else is. So there's that aspect of it too, that you have to. I think you have to be the realist, the pragmatic person in the room, and to say, well, okay, what do we need this for? Are we doing this just because everyone else is doing it, or are we not doing this because we're afraid of X, Y, and Z?
Right.
That's how I would approach it, the first thing.
Right. Paul, thanks for that. Joan, final thoughts. What's the biggest thing companies should be A, afraid of, if they should be, and B, what's the best thing they can get out of sort of loosening up any restrictions that they might have?
Well, thanks for that hard question so much.
I know. You've got 30 seconds to answer.
Really,
we're about done.
It depends. There's so much of this depends on the company. I think that's what Paul, was alluding to too. You have to look at your company at specifics, and we talked about culture. You have to go to your company and analyze this. And analyze it from your company's perspective. I mean, what my small company, my husband's small company, can get out of this is far different than what General Motors, which is a massive company, is going to get out of it. 50 employees versus 50,000 employees is a big difference. So I think that you have to look at this. You have to find somebody who can give you some specifics about it, and look at it from your own specific reference point. Here's why it will be good for you. Here's what you need to be concerned about. Don't worry about anybody else. Look at your own thing.
Listen, we're about up against it. Paul, Eric, Joan, thanks so much. Hang out. Shauna, open up all the lines if you can.
Okay.
We'll go to after show.
What?
All right, from the HR Happy Hour.
Listening to this episode of HR Happy Hour, sponsored by Acquire, a leading provider of workforce planning and analytics solutions and enthusiastic proponent of free stuff. Go to aquire.com/downloads for free software trials, free webinars, free podcasts, free case studies, and more. Did we mention it's all free? Acquire.com/downloads. Who doesn't like freebies?
We're back on the show, everyone.
I have to say one thing. I wish I had a voice like that guy.
That's Mark Stelzner.
That's Mark. Awesome.
Is it really?
We love
oh
Mark.
My God.
That is
I want Mark Stelzner's voice. I want Mark Stelzner's voice.
Oh, we got to tweet that out. Yeah, fantastic.
Ooh,
yeah. Eric, Joan, and Paul, certainly, thanks so much. We're on the after show. We are not streaming live online right now, but whatever we say does make the archive for the show. That can be listened to later. So
oh, there's a warning.
Be careful of that. So.
Disclaimer.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a good show. It was lively. Good stuff. Anybody else who's hanging out on the line? We opened up all the lines. If you care to say hi, please do.
Did I just interrupt somebody?
All right.
I have no idea what just happened, but
yeah.
That's okay. Just roll with it.
Yeah. But now, you know, I did sense that near the end of the show as I thought about it. It's like, bang, we were so, you know, there's so much negativity around this, and that's really a shame. And it's not the lawyer's fault. I think
no.
it's certainly true. We're
no, but we've.
I think the lawyers encourage it, though, Steve.
You
know, I think that's part of, and I can understand that commercially, that part of what they do at the social, not just social recruiting, social media conferences I attend, is they'll always reel the lawyer out to talk about the fear factor and a policy and that you need to talk to your lawyer and that they happen to be the expert in social media. So
yeah, you know,
I think that has a big bit of it.
Sometimes that could be true, but I also think, you know, that I'll give you an example. I saw a demonstration this week of a new technology, and it's sort of in a private beta kind of a thing. And what the technology does is, you know, if you have a candidate for a job and they provide you their email address, right, like a Gmail address or something, you pump in their email address into this little service, and it sucks back all the information it can find, right, related to that email address from LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter, like you'd expect, but lots of other places too, like Pandora and Flickr and hundreds of sites, right? And then it sort of consolidates all this into really kind of a cool report. And when the guy was demoing it to me, he made a very important point that why this service is kind of valuable and he thinks he's going to be able to sell it, is that they're able to restrict what comes back on this report based on some of the laws and the things you're not allowed to look at. Now, I don't know if they were profile, you know, pictures or different things that you're according to the law, not allowed to consider, right, when you're making your sort of hiring decisions. And so if a lawyer's out there just sort of advising you to sort of enforce that law, it's not the lawyer's fault, right? It's just that's the law, right? And the lawyer's helping you to stay compliant. So it's tough, you know, we're quick to blame the lawyers, but so we'd be blaming the laws themselves, and to some extent.
No, but I think sometimes at the conferences they create more. There's two types of people who create a lot of fear. One is the ante, and it's a very good hiding place to say you're going to be breaking a lot of laws. And the other one is the lawyers who are selling policies.
You know what, Bill? I'm going to get defensive about that and say lawyers. Is it their job? That's what their job is. Their job is to keep, you know, your company, you know, or their clients, their job is to keep them out of court and you know, out of bad situations. That's what they're there to do. And if that means, you know, so they're going to try to control, it's a control thing, you know, as many people are tweeting about, it still comes down to matter of control. I don't think it's just because they want to sell policies. As a good lawyers protect their clients. And protecting their clients means, don't go to court. I don't want to see you with a multimillion-dollar judgment for defamation or whatever. Or I don't want you to lose your trade secrets because you didn't protect yourself from, you know, your employer's doing this and this and this. You know, that's not because they're trying to sell a policy. They're trying
to help you. Yeah, I don't essentially see it, Joan, as a social media issue. And that's where I have my concern, that it gets singled out into a social media issue. I think it's actually a whole communication and conduct at work.
I agree with you 100%, but the issue is that the social media is new. And I think somebody said that on the tweet stream tonight. The reason that you have all these problems is just because people are new and they don't know where does the risk fall. So, like so I say, so a lot of attorneys, not Eric certainly, I know he doesn't do it this, here's the risk. The risk is so massive, or we don't know enough about what the risk is, you just shouldn't do anything.
Train the staff. Make it part of your training, your onboarding, your induction. Just make social an integral part of what you talk about rather than a kind of separate devil space.
I think that's the HR person's job. You know what? You take what the lawyer gives you, and then from the HR perspective, you do what you need to do with that information. You don't have to follow their advice. You don't have to do everything that they completely in terms of their policy. But they are there as an advisor from that standpoint, because I'm not an expert on law. I don't want to be an expert on law. I want to be an expert on HR. So you use what they give you, and you take what you feel is good for your company or not. So
I don't get the difference. It's Kathy Manis. I worked for a huge corporation, and I would think that whatever applied for your email communication would apply to any sort of communication, as Bill said. For instance, all of our emails went through Buffalo, New York, where they could be looked at any time. So I guess just, you know, the very simplistic fact is if you don't want it on the cover of a newspaper, don't put it out there.
Certainly, but there's more, obviously, as you know, there's more to it with social media, such as if I have a blog post and I'm using my law firm's marks on my blog post, someone could go to my blog and think that I'm speaking for my firm, when in fact I'm just speaking for myself.
That's true. What
happens? But is that any different to me writing an article for a magazine?
Well, if I'm giving legal advice, certainly I'm going to have a disclaimer if I'm writing for a magazine, but I think in general...
Have a disclaimer on your blog?
Yes, I do. That it's not that I'm not speaking for my firm, and that what I'm giving is not legal advice, and not creating an attorney-client relationship.
Right. Guys, you know, it's been, you know, we could easily just continue on with this all night, but you know, just before we wrap it up and sort of sign off after show, just what do you think is going to happen? Just your thoughts, anyone out there who's still on board. The next, you know, couple of years, you know, where are we going? Is this whole banning and blocking and controlling? Are we going to, you know, will this be a moot conversation, say, 2 years from now?
No, absolutely not. This
really? I want it to be.
Absolutely. Nope. This conversation will still continue 2 years from now. I have a friend who just got done telling me just recently their company issued this whole social media policy that revolves around the concept of not, you know, making sure that you don't ruin your reputation. Like, what? Yeah. I mean, it's like they're actually sort of giving this idea that if you do something on Facebook or YouTube or anything that we just don't like, we might fire you. It's getting... I think that the clampdown is getting even worse. So the pushback is going to continue, and we're going to be talking about this 2 years from now. Absolutely.
Okay.
I think that's true. Except I think it's because things take time, and I keep equating this to the 60s, and I know that all you guys are youngsters and you didn't live through the 60s like I did.
Oh, thank you, Joan. Thank you. Thank you.
Really, but, you know, it was a massive cultural shift, and I think that's kind of what you're seeing with this social media. I think you're seeing a cultural shift, and I'm seeing a lot of the same, you know, yes, you can, no, you can't, yes, you can, no, you can't type of arguments that I saw back then. And I think it's going to take more than 2 years, and that's where I'm going to agree. Do I think that ultimately we're going to quit having this because finally everybody's accepted it and they've understood that it's not the second coming of Hitler that everybody thinks it is. I think that's going to happen, but I don't think it's going to happen in 2 years. I think it's going to take another five, maybe. That's my guess. I think it's going to come. It's just going to be slow, 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 just like the 60s were.
Great. All right, let's wrap it up. Go ahead. Last comment. You got it.
I was going to say, one of the problems from my perspective, when you get the attorneys who show up at these conferences and talk about the horror stories of Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff, they aren't on Twitter and Facebook themselves, so they don't know the practical ramifications of employee use of Twitter and Facebook. So I think take what you hear from these attorneys who speak at these conferences with a grain of salt, or a couple of grains of salt if they're not on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn themselves.
All right. Exactly.
Yeah,
great point.
Eric.
And Eric, do more conferences yourself. That's
absolutely.
Oh, yeah, totally.
That'll help drive the kind of change that many of us are hoping for.
Right.
Eric, thanks so much. Joan, of course, you're the best.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. Paul, my favorite social commentator. Hey, Paul.
Thank you.
I think that Larry King Live role is open, so that could be fun for you.
There you go.
You know what? I think I'm mediocre enough to be rich and famous. I think that's actually possible.
Beautiful. Well, let's hope. Let's hope you continue.
Thanks.
Shauna, great news tonight. Thanks so much. And
great job to you.
Once you get to the Birmingham, we should do. You know, once you get all established down there, I'll come down there. We'll figure out a way, and we'll do a show from there. It will be great.
We should do an HR Evolution South.
We should. You know, Chris has talked to me about it. He's absolutely. You know, will support us if we want to get down there. So maybe that's something we need to work out.
Hey.
So, all right, great, guys. Great show tonight.
All
lots
right.
of fun. I really appreciate everything.
Thanks, Steve.
And,
thanks,
I'll
Chief.
Tweet out the archive in a few minutes. So thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Donna.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
From the HR Happy Hour. Goodbye.
Bye.
See you next week.
Bye.